with the third pick in the 2019 NBA draft, the New York Knicks select RJ Barrett.
David Stern with the announcement.
First pick, select Patrick Ewing. Basketball is back in New York City, my friend.
The New York Knicks select.
What's good, y'all? It's your boy Prez, aka at underscore Presidente, here with part two of season three, episode four of Draft Strickland. This episode was so monumental, we had to split it into two halves because we couldn't, you know, we couldn't jam pack you all with all that good stuff into one episode. So we're here back with Nima and Oscar from Swish Theory to continue the conversation about a couple of the fascinating players from this class. In the second half of the episode, we get into the G League Ignite. We talk about Scoot. We talk about Leonard Miller. We talk about City Sissoko. There's random OG Anunoby slander. There's jokes. There's lots of questions about what the Knicks should do in the draft that are just high-level draft philosophy stuff. And it's a great close to the conversation with our buddies from Swish Theory. So if you haven't checked out part one, go check that out. And when you're done, come right back here to listen to part two. And we'll see you soon. Thanks for tuning in.
Hey, real quick, while you're talking Knicks trade, all right, I'm like on Twitter right now. I just saw someone say to trade three picks and IQ for OG. I just want y'all to know if the Knicks, I'm a proxy Knicks fan. If the Knicks trade for OG Anunoby, bro, I will be pissed. That guy is not that good, bro. You guys do not need to be trading three unprotected
Nobody
first.
Nobody is trading. Oh yeah, nobody is trading three unprotected first.
Y'all do not need OG, bro. I hope the Knicks respect themselves this trade.
You know how much work is being done by Masai Ujiri not specifying what kind of picks are being bandied about? He's literally like,
this is an incredible con job occurring with OG Anunoby. If they get more than two picks for him, I'm quitting.
I respect the fleecing that they're trying to happen solely through sheer force of idiot media and blog and Twitter people, but it's not going to work. The Knicks, if anything, have shown they like hoard their fucking assets like Smaug the dragon hoards his gold. Like, it's just it's just very unlikely.
Damn Canadian exchange. Yeah, bro. Canadian exchange.
Yeah, exactly. So that I agree. This Cax. Is I don't even hate OG. Like, I like OG, but
he's all right,
like
bro.
That. He ain't like that. So
he picks is crazy. Sorry to diverge, but that's just crazy.
It's okay. I spent no less than an hour on Twitter throughout the day just basically saying exactly that. So
just being upset, bro.
you've just gotten your stamp of secondary Knicks fan approval here. Okay, so the next guy I want to talk about is Taylor Hendricks at the University of Central Florida, who's like 6'9", but he kind of looks more than 6'9" to me. Maybe it's because he got a nice fro and he got the headband, which make the fro look even bigger. And he plays big. He plays center like half the time for UCF. He plays power forward. He plays the middle of the zone. He plays in drop. He switches on guys. You don't talk about scheme versatility. They got him doing all types of shit, even though he's a true freshman, which is always kind of a dicey proposition because, you know, kids are new to the game and they're going up against a lot of seniors and stuff like that. And so they ask a lot of him. And he's a four who both does a lot and does not do a lot. He does a lot in the sense that, like, he'll be the guy in the middle of the zone because he could pass a little and shoot more than a little. And they'll also put him in the corner to space the floor, and sometimes they'll run him off screens, even though he's very tall. And you know, sometimes they'll let him cut on the baseline for alley-oops, and you know, he's not out here like ball handling or anything. So he's just the nexus of like rim protection, both primary and secondary rim protection, and then shooting immediately, and age, right? Because he's a freshman. Like, those three things made him kind of an early Perez favorite, as just like, this guy is very intriguing. But I'm still trying to figure out what to make of him. So Oscar, I try to control myself, but he seems like a very cool, like a very modern prospect who is destined to be slept on. Am I tripping, or is he more just like not overrated or underrated? He's just like rated fine. Like, all right, maybe he's a first rounder. I don't know. Like, where are you at on this guy?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Hembo. I think that there's like a definite cap to like how high he can rise due to like the handling problems. But yeah, I mean, he's like a great secondary rim protector, like you said. He runs the five for them, although I don't think that's like likely to be his NBA role, at least the majority of the time. But yeah, he does have that versatility at the college level. I think he's underrated as like a switch defender too. I watched both of, I think they've played Houston twice. And there was one game where he was just like Sasser and Jamal Shed, I don't know how to say it. They kept switching onto him. He kept switching onto them, and he would just like lock them down every time. Like, I think combined they were like 0-for-6 with like 4 turnovers or something. It's weird, like when he defends at the point of attack, he looks like he's off balance and like flailing all over the place, but he like always gets to the spot, and like he has good hands. So yeah, I think he's underrated in that role. And I know the shooting has like kind of fallen off over the past couple weeks.
It fell off a little, and then it started coming back. I think he's back up to, he was down to like 36, now he's back up to like 39.
He's at 38%
right now. Nice. Yeah, I think that the handle is like maybe the worst I can remember for like a perimeter oriented prospect. Obviously he's like 6'10, so he stands out. 6'9, 6'10, he stands out among that group. But like we talk a lot about how confidence from three is like an indicator for shooting. When Hendo gets like a rebound, he doesn't even like take a dribble most of the time. He like just like looks for a guard to pass to, like on some like Bismack Biyombo type shit. So yeah, it's rough. And then like even like doing like connective passing stuff, he'll like crouch and like his dribble will be like all shaky, just like dribbling into a DH, like handling the ball off. So like, yeah, I don't think there's any like outcome. I don't want to say any, but I don't think it's fair to project like anything more than like stand in the corner and attack in a straight line, which he's not bad at. Like he does have some shake, and like he's explosive as a finisher. So like I think he can be fine in that role, just like attacking off the catch from the corner and then cutting. But yeah, I mean, I think he's pretty easily like a top 20 prospect, and I think that you know, he'll easily be higher than that in a redraft. It's just about how I guess like clear the ceiling is for him.
Nima, where are you at on him? He's at the, I agree with everything Oscar said, and I do wonder, like, without him tightening up the handle, like, okay, he can shoot, he could drive in straight lines, he's a big guy who could jump, so he could dunk. But even without tightening up the handle, I'm like, can an NBA team like run him off movement? Can they get weird and funky with it? Not that, like, you know, there's a fine line between actual innovation and just Nick Nurse offensive stupidity. So, you know, the eye of the beholder and all that. But where are you at on him, and particularly on his offense?
Yeah, well, yeah, to kind of echo Oscar, like he's a, just real quickly on his defense, like he's an awesome defender. I think like y'all have said, he plays a lot of the small ball five, kind of like the bottom of the post, bottom of the zone. I do think he's more kind of in like the roamer role, where he's going to kind of just be touching all over the floor and switching out on the guards a lot. And he does a great job of it offensively. I really like Hendo. I think he's a fantastic shooter. 38% at 6'10 is ridiculous, or 6'9 is ridiculous. Especially, you know, considering he had a pretty bad stretch. I think it was like six straight games. He went six of 29 in that stretch from three. And outside of that, you know, other than that, he's been incredible from deep. I think, like Oscar said, a lot of his limitations come with his handle. He is pretty bad with the ball on the floor. It's going to be a lot of spot up shooting, especially right off the bat, a lot of straight line drives. He's not that great of a post up guy. What he has been doing a lot at UCF that I've liked a lot is kind of playing whenever facing zones, he'll be the guy who goes and like breaks the middle and plays sort of as like a connective passer. His decision making in that role has improved a ton throughout the season, because before he would hold the ball there and the defense would be able to either get the ball out of his hands by stealing it or cover up on open guys or come out on him if he was going to take a shot. Now, you know, if he's in that area, he gets the ball, he has made the decision, you know, almost, it's almost become premeditated, which I also am not a huge fan of, but it's better than, you know, taking forever. Especially when facing zones, where he kind of knows if he's going to shoot it or pass it now. And he's gotten better at just finding open guys. I think UCF also has a lot of guys who are awesome off movement. Ithiel Horton has had some like huge games recently. I think he's going to be a great G League guard. But Hendo himself, like, his offensive limitations are kind of what keep him out of the lotto for me, because similar to Jarris, I think he's right there in terms of the convo of like best non-Wemby defender. He covers so many positions and he's just like such an imposing shot blocker with, like, we talked about Jarris's, you know, kind of athletic vulnerabilities. Like, Hendricks doesn't have very many. He's an incredible vertical athlete. He gets off the ground really fast. And his timing is awesome. You know, he's a really good shot blocker, and he does a great job inside in like passing lanes and you know, creating loose balls and stuff like that. So I think he's gonna be a really good defender as well, similar to Jarris. I think that's gonna be, they're gonna be in similar roles in the sense of, you know, kind of stand on the perimeter, go set screens, go pop out. In terms of shooting off movement stuff, he's had a couple, you know, plays, flashes here and there of him shooting off the dribble or coming off screens, off curls and stuff like that. And I think that part of the game could be there eventually, but it's not there really. I also watched a couple of his AAU games. He was on a good team, E1T1, with Bryce Sensabaugh and Dylan Mitchell. And Bruce Thornton, who's also at Ohio State.
Oh my God,
State,
I have to watch this team. This sounds like my favorite team ever. Holy shit.
it was a good team. And, you know, Sensabaugh came off the bench with that team scoring a lot. But Hendricks is really kind of like the offensive guy on that team, aside from Sensabaugh. I mean, like, Dylan Mitchell was just cutting, kind of playing in a somewhat similar role. A little bit more ball handling for him there than he is at UT. But a lot of cutting and spot up shooting, and it was really just a lot of like pick and pop, pick and roll between Bruce Thornton and Taylor Hendricks whenever Sensabaugh was off the court. So I think that like he can be used a little bit as a small ball five. Probably not going to be the case the first few years of him in the league. It's going to be a lot of spot up shooting, but I mean, like Oscar said, the limitations really just rely on, or really just like are all in, is poor ball handling. You know, he should not put the ball on the floor more than just like a straight line drive. I don't trust him to go to his left whatsoever. And it's going to be a lot of like catch and shoot shooting, but I like him a lot. I think he's fringe lotto. I think he doesn't bring enough offensively like Jarris does to be like a for sure lotto guy, but his defense is awesome. And I think that's what's going to, you know, really get him minutes and get him drafted in the first round. I think at this point, if he's not first round, I think people are just kind of overlooking him because he's in a good conference, averaging 15 points per game on a pretty good team.
As a freshman.
That's just lost a lot of close games as a freshman. And also like anchoring that entire team, or not, I wouldn't say anchoring, but because he's like, he's not that big of like an imposing guy in the paint. Like teams are still getting into the paint with him there and challenging him at the rim, but he's like very clearly their best defender. And like you said, they have so many schemes that it just, it really opens up a lot for them schematically, just being able to do a lot of different things defensively. So I think having a guy like that in the NBA, you know, especially if he is able to improve a little bit offensively to the point where he's passable, having a guy like that that you can throw into kind of any defensive scheme and he's going to be impactful, like that's an NBA guy for a long time. So I like Hendricks a lot. I think he's one of those guys in this class that I think is going to be for sure, you know, like a long-term role player. And, you know, anything above that just comes with whatever growth comes in the NBA. But I think his skill defensively as well as his shooting should just – should see him be on the floor for a couple contracts at least.
Yeah, I mean, if there's any lesson I learned from the McDaniels brothers, it's just that, like, versatile defense, size, and shooting goes a long way, even if you're not viewed as, like, some possible star prospect. There's a lot of people who would happily line up to play to pay Jaden a huge amount of money, just below star money. So it'll be interesting to see where he goes. We don't have to spend that much more time on him, but he's one of those guys who, like, if the Knicks did want to move Obi, I would love for Hendricks to just do what Obi is doing, because, like, that's the stuff he's good at. And while that's misuse for Obi, that's proper use for Hendricks. Like, oh, stay to the corner, cut, jump high, yeah, run in transition. Like,
I'd way rather have Hendricks standing in the corner than Obi.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Obi's
he's a great fit in New York, in my opinion. I think that would be a great pickup for y'all, especially if you do move on from Obi this offseason.
Yeah,
so
we'll see. If Obi's here, then between him and Randall, they're probably just gonna pass on Hendricks, but which I understand. Like, I don't. This is a whole nother pod, but like,
I think y'all have to kind of go wing, right? Like, y'all have so many guards right now.
We do, but do we though? Like, it's really like in terms of long term.
I guess, yeah. Right? I guess y'all don't have a lot of guards at
your exactly. Exact, so like IQ, Grimes, and Brunson. That's really it. Like, RJ's a wing, a little smaller of a wing. Deuce is my son.
This is Miles McBride hate. This is Miles McBride hate happening in New York.
Deuce, we are fans of Deuce here at Draft Strickland. Nobody had Deuce as high as me. I was probably too irrationally high. And I still think he's going to shoot. This has just been one long, small sample size disaster. I'll be proven right in the second half. Don't worry. Have faith. Hold strong, Deuce faithful. Okay. The last people I want to talk about are the G League Ignite, who I haven't had, you know, last year I probably watched them more than any NCAA team, and this year I haven't watched like any Ignite, so I'm gonna definitely be playing a shit ton of catch up. And for purposes of this discussion, let's skip over Scoot, because Scoot is just like, he deserves like his own extended podcast, and he's just not going to end up on the Knicks because he's going to be picked way ahead of that. So I want to talk mostly about Leonard Miller and how do you pronounce his name? Sissoko? Is it
City Sissoko?
Yeah. So those are the two other guys who kind of were on my radar as potential first rounders to check out this year from the Ignite. Kids with really good measurables, both of them. Both of them have really good wingspan. City's what, like 6'7"? 6'8", right? And
he's listed as 6'8" now.
And yeah, Leonard Miller's like 6'11", even though it's like a fraudulent 6'11" because he got a long ass neck and that doesn't do anything for basketball. But he has long arms.
He's skinny.
Yeah, and he's skinny. But he's also like 15 years old, so like that's okay. We could just get him some cheeseburgers in the next couple of years. But anyway, these guys, I wanted to talk about them because I first saw City in the Nike USA versus World game that I'm forgetting what it's actually called. And he was doing all these the Hoop Summit, and he was doing all these awesome passes. And I was like, who the fuck is this French dime off king over here? Who's also 6'7", right? because like you said, ideally the Knicks get a wing, and I'm like, damn, this guy seems pretty talented. Maybe he's a first rounder. And then Leonard Miller obviously had tons of hype last year. Had a kind of interesting situation. We didn't know if he was going to play college or Ignite or go overseas or whatever. And he was in the combine, which, you know, is worth as much as you want it to be worth, with many grains of salt. And he looked absolutely lost at the combine, which, although I was kind of sad, I then kind of became unsad because I was like, yeah, of course he looks fucking lost. These guys have been playing like system basketball for years. And he was just kind of playing in this, like, you know, Oscar talked about Jarris talking about playing in like the gauntlet top high school level competition. And Leonard Miller was not really playing in that. He was playing in like the Schitt's Creek Canadian type leagues and dominating. And, you know, the flashes were awesome and all that. But I'm like, oh, he probably needs to learn how to play basketball before he can take advantage of his intuition and his physical gifts and stuff like that. So Nima, I know you're like the G League guru, but before we get to what you think of that, of those two guys, Oscar, did you ever get around to Leonard Miller in the last cycle? Cause he had a lot of like, he was just such a fascinating player that when he declared possible eligibility, everybody was like, who is this mystery man entering the battleground and all that, right? Like, did you ever poke around and see what's up last year?
Yeah, I watched a couple of his high school games and then also at Hoop Summit. I don't know. I mean, I was obviously intrigued by this like huge handle.
Right.
Like, 6'10". Maybe shoot and like can right, like crazy. Yeah, I mean I kind of same as like Holmes, I kind of waited until like to see if he would declare or not to like have a definitive opinion on him, but I was definitely like intrigued, and I do think I would have ended up like definitely first round on him last year. To be honest, I haven't watched a ton of G League Ignite since the college basketball season started, and I know that Miller has like kind of taken a leap because he started the season like a little rough, especially in those games versus Wemby and the French team. So I can't really comment on like Miller this year, but yeah, I mean, last year he was definitely a guy I liked.
See, last year I felt like a hater because, you know, he had the skills, but I the idea of it just seemed like people were fixated on this idea of him, which is not unfair because he was 17 and tall and had very good movement skills, which you could nitpick all you want, but if that's your foundation as a 17-year-old, you're probably going to get people's attention, right? So it definitely may have been a case of me nitpicking a little bit. And it wasn't even like he has a very interesting looking shot for people who have not listening, who have not seen it. And it's still interesting. It's probably a little better now, but he's going to be one of those dudes who, you know, teams will dare to shoot, and maybe he'll fuck around and shoot despite that. That's how I describe it right now. But, I don't know, like it didn't add up for me, and it seemed like a lot of evaluators, professional and amateur, were like I'd hear people talk about, oh, what about the competition for other guys? And then for Leonard Miller, they would not talk about the competition. And then, you know, they'd talk about, you need to shoot now, right? And now for Leonard Miller, it's like, oh, wait, but not him, right? Because he's such a different prospect. Yeah. So I'm like, damn, like, everybody's riding this wave, and it feels a little crazy now. But you know, like, time has passed since then, and like I mentioned before, the combine really illuminated that like he is very early in the learning curve, and that made my eval a little bit softer because, like, oh, of course he's gonna be finding his way in a lot of respects. He just hasn't had the same basketball education that a lot of these players have had. So, you know, even though he's not in, but now the switch is flipped. He's gotten to spend some time with Team Canada, which has a great program. And obviously the Ignite, every time the Ignite comes up on this podcast, I rave about just like, I love what they do every year with these kids. I love from a development on court, off court perspective. I think it's a great environment for prospects. to not only learn how to play, but get paid a lot of money. So good for Leonard for deciding on that instead of fucking going to Duke and being misused by John Shire for fucking 5 months or some shit. So I, what I'm most interested from you, Nima, as somebody who has watched them this year, is like, what have you seen change from last year to this year?
Yeah, I think like you said, the narrative around Leonard was weird last year, especially with like similar guys like Shaedon Sharpe, mm-hmm. who like also only played in high school, or like EYBL or whatever. And, you know, the sample size of him against like top talent wasn't that great. And so it was like, well, you know, what's the competition level like? And it seemed like anybody who was like high on Shaedon was low on Leonard. And anybody who was high on Leonard was low on Shaedon. I, like, last year, having worked with Ignite, I didn't have a lot of time to really dive into, like, a dude who was playing at Fort Erie. So when I heard about Leonard, it was just kind of like, okay, cool. And I knew Ignite were kind of looking at him. And so at that point, I sort of dove into him a little bit, but not much as a prospect for last year's class, but more as just, like, someone who could play for Ignite, you know, this season. And I'm glad that happened. I'm glad that worked out. You know, like you said, in the combine game, he was like a lost puppy. You know, like he had no idea what was going on out there. I think a couple of things that benefit Leonard. One, he was 6'4", like 2.5 years ago. He's 6'11" now.
That's another learning curve. So this How is a guy move that, in a body there. Yeah, you have an extra half foot.
You go 7 inches. Yeah, bro, you go 7 inches in 2 years. You're going to a whole new level of play style. So, that was his first time playing against other dudes his size who have had, like, real training, you know, in a competitive environment at least. And so, yeah, it's going to be bad, you know. And, of course, it was bad. I don't think he was ready for last year's class whatsoever, but I'm glad he got that experience and got to go and get feedback from teams because he knew what he had to go work on. Now, this year – right now, in this moment, he has a back injury. He's been out for like the last week. I don't know when he's going to return, hopefully soon. But, you know, this year, Ignite have had, in my opinion, one of the most fun teams to watch. I'm actually, like, anybody who hasn't watched them, Oscar included, I'm openly booing you. Because this is a fun team, man. Like, not just Scoot, even when Scoot's out. You got Eric Mika, who's an awesomely talented big man. John Jenkins, who's probably the best shooter in the
league. Westchester Knicks Young, legend, dude. John Jenkins.
Man, and the thing is like, unlike a lot of guys, I'm going on a couple tangents about the G League right now just because I have to get it out, but I think one of the worst narratives about the G League Ignite guys is that the G League inflates stats. I think that is because they're in the G League, you know, they're going to score more points. They're going to have more rebounds. They're going to have this and that. The G League is a guard driven league. That might be true for guards. For big men, that is not the case whatsoever. For forwards, that's not the case whatsoever. And then on top of that, like, for the G League Ignite guys, you look at guys at Alabama, Arkansas, Duke, whatever. If they're going into the league, they're the best player on that roster. You know, aside from Scoot, on this team, you have John Jenkins, who's probably a borderline NBA player. You have Cam Young, who's probably a borderline NBA player. Other guys like Aubrey Dawkins, who's like at one point was one of the best shooters in the NCAA whenever he was playing in college. Eric Mika was a dominant big man in his conference. Like, these guys were also the best player on their college teams. So, you know, Leonard getting 15 points per game, 16 points per game in the G League, playing as like the third option is very impressive. Like, I don't understand how people don't find that impressive. A 19-year-old scoring a lot of his, like, a lot of his twos are self-created. Obviously, a lot of his three-point attempts are assisted. And he's not shooting great. He's not a great shooter. His form is kind of messed up. But, like, what he brings offensively, his ball skills are awesome for a guy who's 6'11". He is, like, pretty versatile just in the terms of how you can play him. He's not necessarily a big man, but he can pick and roll. He's pretty athletic. He can pop out. And he's a pretty good passer. Like, he only averages, I think it's like 1.5 assists a game. I think that's more system than it is anything else, because like they're not running, you know, DHOs for him and John Jenkins and stuff. They're not running plays for like Scoot cutting and Leonard passing to him. Those are more so stuff that's happening for like Eric Mika. A lot of it is going to be like, Leonard, get the ball, you know, maybe ISO a little bit, get yourself into the paint. And then, you know, maybe you get trapped or, you know, the defense collapses and you can kick out to a shooter. A lot of it is, you know, you're going to be creating off your own. It's not plays really written up for Leonard. But I think like his size and then his ability on both ends, like I think his defense gets a little pretty underrated. There's some people who say he's not a great defender or not a good defender. He, in my opinion, just needs to put on a lot of weight and needs to like get into his body. And, you know, he grew to 6'11" 2 years ago. It's going to take him a while to put on the weight that will be his playing weight in the NBA. I think defensively, he's got really good instincts. His timing is really good in rotations. And he's a pretty good help defender. He switches out onto the perimeter pretty well. Obviously, G League guards are extremely quick and extremely athletic, so I don't expect him to stay in front of, you know, Jalen Lecque or Mason Jones or Mac McClung. But, you know, he's staying in front of the A.J. Lawsons and the Elijah Canes of the world, and that's fine. Like, that's what you need to be doing, you know, at the G League, because – those guys were the best players in their college teams a couple years ago. And you're watching NCAA players struggling to guard 6'6" white dudes and putting them in the first round. So it's, I think the G League Ignite scouting, like, not what is it? Like setting is still being figured out by a lot. I think a lot of people also just still neglect it. I mentioned that when KOC didn't have either of them top 30 and he chirped back at me and was like, oh, don't watch them or don't have them top 30, but yet Jaime Jaquez ahead of Leonard Miller. So I think there's some just kind of inexcusable stuff, in my opinion, of how people watch G League Ignite or don't watch G League Ignite. This was the case last season too, and it took until like May for people to go around and watch film. So I think it's going to be a similar situation. The stuff with Leonard being in the 20s, with all the things he brings offensively and all the things he brings defensively, like, he's not a Jarris or Taylor Hendricks where he's, you know, just standing in the corner and, you know, maybe straight line driving or just like little post fades or whatever it may be. Like, this is a dude like taking guys off the dribble, creating space for himself at 6'11". And like, yeah, he's shooting from the chest because he hasn't learned how to shoot at 6'11" yet. You know, like, he was playing, like you said, in a system that wasn't developing. And now G League Ignite are trying to develop him as much as they can in one season. Was Ignite probably the best case for him? I think, given all things, like,
I think it was probably not. For me, it was the best case, just because, like, we could talk about upside and how to utilize his, like, his being coordinated and handling and all of that. But what he, like, he needed right. That foundation of like, how do I not get?
He needs somebody to teach him how to play basketball.
Like, he was literally just like lost out there, and it wasn't like in the combine. He was
and considering his other options, I think his other options, whenever he like listed his top five, it was like Arizona State, TCU, Kansas, and somewhere else. I think like those aren't exactly places that he's gonna learn how to play like a high level of basketball. So maybe G League Ignite was the right decision. 19 years old, scoring 16 and 8, playing really good defense, and having to do a lot without Scoot, who was out twice this season with injuries. It's incredible what he's been doing, and he's really improved all throughout the season. Like I said, you know, there's things he needs to improve on, and I think a lot of it just comes with the fact that he's a late bloomer, and he's a guy who needs to get used to his body and needs to get used to how to play at this size, how to shoot at this size. And I think once that comes around, it's going to work out for him. I think he needs to go, like, I'm really high on him. I have him top 10. I think he needs to go top 10 to a team that can spend time on him and is willing to develop him and willing to invest in him and not just, like, have him sit on the bench or whatever, or throw him out to the Wolves and see what happens. Like, he needs to go to a team that has the pieces in place to
doesn't that seem like a narrow band of, and this is one reason he kind of scares me as a prospect, because he seems like the kind of player who needs to be on a very specific team where he can get minutes and fucking brick a lot of jump shots and do all that stuff. And while he continues to figure out, he needs to be on a team where he can figure stuff out
with the pace,
with a coach who is very good at like optimizing a player. The Pacers are a great one. Rick Carlisle, I think Rick Carlisle, with how he's used
Malkerin, I think it's there, and Nembhard,
and even Jackson in limited minutes, though he's not in the rotation anymore. He uses those well. But like, that's kind of,
I think Indiana's the team for him, man. I think Indiana, especially if you have a Harden,
like you can get into like this weird situation of like self-fulfilling prophecies of sabotage. So it's like that, and this is what's fascinating about him. It's like, if you have the right situation, you're talking not just high upside, but also high floor. But if you have a coach, like, I would never want him on a Tibbs coach team, right? Like, he'd be horrible in these like narrow roles.
I don't want Leonard on the Rock.
right, or the Rockets. So like, he's one of those where I don't think draft number will really play a role in, like,
it's gonna be about
exactly placement. It's gonna be about who more than what number. So it'll be really interesting. And then it's also weird because like so many teams are competing right now, so minutes are very hard to come by. And then it's also more weird than that because a lot of teams got a lot of the picks, or rather less teams have a lot of the picks, right? So like, it's just, there's a lot of moving parts, which for a smart team could be an opportunity in terms of Leonard Miller, but for a stupid team could be like, oh, he's a tall ball handler, we'll bring him in and he'll be great. And then they don't do the things that you need to do, you know?
Yeah, one last thing on Miller, and this is just kind of general draft philosophy for me. Bet on late bloomers. Bet on ambidextrous guys. Leonard does everything right-handed but shoot and dribble. He's also like really good at finishing with both hands and dribbling with both hands, but he's primarily a left-handed guy, shoots left-handed, does everything in his regular life right-handed, and like I said, late bloomer. Those two skills, you'd be surprised. Or those two, like, attributes, you'd be surprised how often those guys
sounds like a out, great reason to be high on RJ so. Barrett, who's only coming into the skill portions of his.
I said
he's a righty in real life.
Yeah, but once he learns how to dribble with both hands, we'll talk about him.
He probably better finishes right than left at this point. I get way more stress when he's driving left than throwing up like junk ball. But, although he's cut a lot, I should give him credit because he's cut a lot of the junk ball out of his game. Oscar,
it's gonna be really fun when he's driving right in Sacramento next year.
Oh man, I don't know what kind of timeline this is.
I don't care for who. I don't care what it's going to be. I'm just about
it. You just want them to build like the lefty infinity gauntlet out there in Sacramento. But we're already doing it in New York, man.
Put every lefty in sack.
That's put the Knicks in sack. we got half of them.
I'm not sure how much Knicks fans would enjoy that.
It's okay. But. We're very fond fans of the also perpetually hated on playoff caliber Sacramento Kings here at Draft Strickland. Oscar, I know you mentioned earlier that you haven't really watched a ton of G League or updates on Miller, but we're closing in on not 2 hours, but almost 2 hours. Any other thoughts on Leonard or this cycle generally, or what you think? Matter of fact, this is what we should close with. Fuck all that. So I'll ask the same question for each of you to take us home. And it'll be fun because Oscar's like paying very close attention to the Knicks and Nima's just like, whatever, they should trade RJ to Sacramento. So if you're Walt Perrin, like, what are you looking at? What are like one or two of the main things you're looking at in this year's class, right? We have two picks. We might trade one. We might even fuck around and have three picks if the Wizards keep winning. So like, I'm going to assume that will come out of this draft with somebody, unlike last year. I don't know if it'll be one player or more than one, or there's a lot of permutations here, but like, what are you looking at? Because, you know, everybody's like, we need wings, but and fortunately, there are a lot of wings here, but then there's guys like Hendricks and Jairus and other guys who are like more fours. So what's your advice for Walt Perrin?
Yeah, I think at least one of the picks has to be spent on like a bigger wing. I think that's the logical last piece for this core. Whether it's like Jet, Jairus, if he counts as like a bigger wing, I'm forgetting someone. Jordan Walsh, I know he's like kind of faded from like the top 20 conversation.
Big fan.
Yes, me as well. I think I'm still forgetting. There's the Thompsons, but like, I don't know. I don't think we're going to be that bad.
There's Chris Murray. Brady, there's Ant Black. Max is.
To me, he's more of a guard, but like, size-wise. Yeah. I mean, he fills that. Yeah, come with a big wing. And then, yeah, the other pick, I feel like you just like can take whoever you think is the best prospect. Like, I don't think there's any burning needs at that point.
All right, Nima, after you trade RJ Barrett to the Kings, what's your advice for the Knicks for this draft?
Man, I lived in New York last year. I went to more like as many. I think I went to more Knicks games last year than I've been to like any Rockets games in a single season. I'm also balding slowly, and I want you guys to know that those two things are related, because watching RJ and Randall really made me lose a shit ton of hair. I was not crazy about the Knicks last season. Obviously, I think they've kind of gotten a little bit better this year. I haven't watched them nearly as much as I did last year or would like to.
See, what happens? You left New York and we got good. So the lesson is stay out of New York.
And the year before, y'all were good too. The 1 year I went was the year y'all decided to not know how to play
basketball. Yeah, it's because you were there.
Julius Randle wanted to put a show on for me, and instead he put a 16-8 on 40% shooting. I think like Oscar said, there's a couple routes you can go with it. If you use both picks, one of them needs to be a big wing. Oscar said Jet and my eyes lit up. I think Jet on the Knicks would be fantastic. I also think he probably gets taken off the board before y'all have a pick. I think in the range that y'all are looking at, it's probably going to be closer to like Grady Dick, Filipowski, maybe Jordan Walsh if he declares. I think he probably stays in college another year. A guy like Chris Murray could really help you guys out too. And then the second pick, like he said, you know, probably just go for best player available or whoever you think fits your system best. I also wouldn't be surprised if they package the two picks up with a guy like Obi, or maybe they do get tired of RJ, and RJ, you could probably trade up higher with RJ, or even get some other pieces back. But I wouldn't mind if they traded up in the draft and went into that like top 10, top 11, 12 range. You could go for a secondary guard like Cason Wallace. I think that would be awesome next to Brunson. I love Grimes. Grimes is my dude, but
we know they tried to trade up for Ivy last year. They weren't able to, but they tried. So we know they consider that.
Yeah. Stuff. So I wouldn't be surprised if they were to trade up for a guy like, you know, one of these off guards, like, or combo guards kind of, like Keontae or Cason or even Nick Smith. I think all of those guys would be really good fits next to Brunson and whoever else is still there, whatever the Knicks decide to do, honestly. There's a couple different paths they could go, but in my opinion, I would try and consolidate a little bit. I don't think I'm not very all in on the Knicks development group, similar to my own team. I think consolidation is probably best, and you go for maybe one guy that is higher up in the draft class and the picks you have that you think can give you a more immediate impact. Someone you're not going to need to kind of drag along and figure out how to develop over time. Someone who's, you know, he might not be at a ceiling or, you know, day one, obviously, but a guy who can come in day one and give you some good impact. Y'all got lucky with a guy like Quentin Grimes falling to where y'all picked him and being able to use him kind of, you know, towards the end of his first season, really effectively, and especially this year, really effectively. So someone who can kind of come in and obviously, like you said, a Tibbs team, so someone who will play good defense. and is willing to deal with his shit. I think that would be most beneficial rather than using both picks and potentially having one guy who's kind of waiting in the wing, and then you have another guy who's, you know, getting spot minutes here and there. Just package the picks up, get rid of some of these guys you're not really using in your rotation or don't see long term. Maybe bring in a couple other role players from another team and draft someone a little bit higher up who you think will benefit the view of the team a little bit better going forward. Because I think Brunson's obviously a piece you keep around for a while. Probably Randall. I think you can probably get a good amount out of RJ, and in my opinion, you do that if you can. But like, I think you want a good, just a good piece who you know will be part of the core. Where they're picking, which is like mid-teens, probably, right? It's going to be about mid-teens with both of your picks.
I mean, maybe the Knicks are like streaking between good and bad in any given week. So, we have the,
that's true. Yeah, anything can happen.
And then we have Dallas, which is equally variable.
Yeah, I think the Mavs pick probably ends up like low 20s. And I think with this draft class, like I said earlier, from like 5 to 25, it's pretty jam-packed. You could find a guy who, you know, the Knicks have top 10 on their board at 22 or 23, you know. So I don't think they should trade either of those picks come trade deadline. You wait for kind of the lotto balls to fall in place and see who has what where. I think whatever trade happens with those picks, if there is to happen, it happens on draft day. Yeah, my advice wouldn't really be draft related. It would be more about the team as a whole if I was actually giving advice. But in terms of those picks, like I think consolidation is probably the best route.
All right. Well, you heard it. You heard the sage advice from our Swish Theory gurus, Nima and Oscar. Thank you for joining us for this marathon pod. I think we're gonna end up splitting it into two to make up for me not giving people a pod last week. You can find Oscar at Oscar_hoops, and you can find Nima at, what the fuck is your at, Nima? At FindingNima23, both on Twitter, and of course you can find them all at Swish Theory, which is theswishtheory.com. And at Swish Theory on social media. Guys, thanks for joining. This has been a ball. And listeners, if you made it this far, you are probably sadistic. And I salute you. And we'll see you again in 2 weeks. Thank you, everybody. And enjoy the rest of your evening. Keep sticking with us. We're almost at March Madness. Peace out, y'all.
The New York Knicks select.